you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Justin Duckham. President Obama met with House Republicans today at the Capitol, where the conversation centered around the federal budget. GOP lawmakers pressed Obama on how much he's willing to cut spending and entitlements, areas where the two sides differ greatly. The president met yesterday with Senate Democrats and is slated to meet with Senate Republicans and House Democrats tomorrow. One of those House Democrats, Steny Hoyer, says Paul Ryan's GOP budget is an unserious proposal. Hoyer said Ryan's latest spending plan unfairly protects the wealthy from higher taxes and makes health care more expensive for millions of Americans by repealing Obamacare. A liberal watchdog group today called Obama corrupt for refusing to ask his chief advocacy group to disclose its donors. Common Cause President Bob Edgar said the group Organizing for Action is blatantly attempting to sell access to Obama without identifying who is taking its money from. Obama will address OFA's first ever conference tonight in Washington, D.C. Justin Duckham, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Warrior Catholic Show. I am Chris Ricketts, your host. And boy, do we have an exciting show planned out for you tonight. There's a lot to cover. The call-in number, if you want to be a part of the show, is 718-305-7176. There's a lot of news, including the new Pope. That's right. We have a new Pope, or Habemus Papam. But also at the top of our second hour, we will have a special guest, Sister Helena Burns of the Daughters of St. Paul, and she will be talking to us about the theology of the body, originally written by Pope John Paul II. So stay tuned for Sister Burns to be calling in at the top of the next hour. But until then, Habemus Papam! That's really exciting, folks. In just the second day of the conclave, Argentinian Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio was elected Pope, and he is the first pontiff from the Americas. He's chosen the name Pope Francis, the very first Pope Francis, too. So we're seeing all kinds of awesome new stuff. He is 76 years old and has spent nearly his entire career at home in Argentina. He is the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, and he also is reported to have gotten the second most votes after Cardinal Ratzinger in the 2005 papal election. And this is from Fox News, by the way. He's specialized in the kind of pastoral work that some say is an essential skill for the next pope. He spent a lifetime of teaching and leading priests in Latin America, which has the largest share of the world's Catholics. He has shown a keen political sensibility, as well as the kind of self-effacing humility that fellow cardinals value highly. He's also known for modernizing an Argentine church that had been among the most conservative in Latin America. He is a Jesuit, and he is focused on social outreach. And it says here that Catholics are still buzzing over his speech last year that accused fellow church officials of hypocrisy for forgetting that Jesus Christ bathed lepers and ate with prostitutes. One cool thing about this pope is that he only has one lung. Now, that's kind of interesting. He had to have one removed due to an infection when he was a teenager. He took the name Francis, which draws connections to St. Francis of Assisi, who saw his calling as trying to rebuild the church in a time of turmoil, also evokes images of Francis Xavier, one of the 16th century founders of the Jesuit order that is known for its scholarship and outreach. He is the son of middle-class Italian immigrants and is known as a humble man who denied himself the luxuries that previous Buenos Aires cardinals enjoyed. He often rode the bus to work, cooked his own meals, and regularly visited the slums that ring Argentina's capital. This is very exciting, folks. You know, my kids were all, we had the Pope cam on, the smokestack cam, actually, on today from Rome. Several news stations on the internet were streaming it live, and, you know, this morning there was black smoke a couple of times. And, you know, it's funny to read the headlines describing the papal election here, the conclave. You know, cardinals fail to elect a new pope again, as if they were going to get it on the first try. I mean, you had to have 77 votes. Remember, Pope Benedict changed the rules, so there had to be a two-thirds majority in order to elect a pope from the conclave. So it was just funny to me to see some of the headlines and some of the, you know, commentary. The cardinals have failed to elect a pope for the third time. Yeah, well, look at the Senate. They can't. It's hard for them unless the Democrats actually have the majority now. But it's hard for them to even to pass a bill. I mean, so seriously, you have 117 cardinals all getting together, and you need a two-thirds majority, and they're all just submitting names. There was also a lot of, talk and speculation about, the church is amidst lots of scandal with the sexual abuse and corruption in the church, and yada, 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 so they need someone who's going to come in and, you know, really clean house and this, that, and the other thing. And look, guys, I don't want to downplay anything that's happened, with the church, especially with some of those abuse cases. But it really seems like some of the media like to hold on to it to really, you know, as if it's going to destroy the church. Look, the church has been around for 2,000 years, and let's face it, folks. There have been some god awful people that have represented her. We can't deny that. But just because there are bad people in the church, that doesn't, at least in my mind, negate the truth of the Catholic Church's teachings, founded by Christ. You know, if you look at Jesus, one of his own chosen, his closest friends, one of his own 12 apostles, betrayed him and handed him over to the Jews to be put to death. He was paid to do it. So, you know, you could take a look at Jesus and be like, wow, what's this guy starting? One of his own people just turned him in. And then for a long time after that, after Jesus ascended into heaven, there were plenty of people that were persecuting Christians, putting them to death. So again, you could say, well, look at this. These people, they don't even, you know, everyone hates them. Everyone's trying to kill them. Yada, yada. What are we doing here? What kind of a religion is that? So, I mean, in the context of the fact that there are going to be sinners and evil people that that get into the church leadership sometimes or and do terrible things, you know, that's going to happen. But I am personally not going to deny the truth and beauty of the Catholic faith. And, you know, these cardinals were guided by the Holy Spirit as they were electing this new pope. Pope Francis. That's a great name. I love that. I've always liked St. Francis of Assisi. He's always been one of my personal favorites. You know, he was quite the ladies' man. He was a musician. He liked to play the mandolin and go to wild parties. He was the son of a rich cloth merchant. And he gave it all up. He gave it all up. I mean, his father, he ticked his father off pretty bad when he was out giving, you know, just handing money out to poor people. At one point, you know, Francis started to hang out among the beggars and the lepers, and his father, who was more concerned with status, was definitely not, you know, happy with that. So, you know, seeing this Pope pick the name of Francis, not only, you know, Francis Xavier as well was a great saint, founder of the Jesuit order. The Jesuits are a very smart group of people. They're the intellectuals. So, you know, I'm very glad to see that he's chosen this name, and I want to offer all prayers for Pope Francis as he starts his papacy. You know, 74 years old, and most people are retired by then. And you know, how would you like that in your mid 70s? Hi, you're the leader of the world Catholic Church. The Roman Catholic Church with 1.2 billion members, you're the leader. There you go. So that's very admirable, and it's a tall order. But hopefully, and we should pray for him as he undertakes this great challenge. And of course, there's work to be done in the church. There's a lot to be, I guess, fixed. A lot to you know, we need to boldly proclaim the truth and move forward with the new evangelization called for by Pope John Paul II. You know, reaching out. The new evangelization is all about reaching out to those who may have heard the gospel and not yet completely understood. It's reaching out to fellow Christians, fellow Catholics, and proclaiming those beautiful truths taught by the Catholic Church, by the Magisterium. So I'm excited about this new Pope. And, you know, actually it was a pretty quick conclave. You know, everyone was, I mentioned all the news media was, they were all talking, you know, well, they failed again. Here we go. Bishops can't get it together. This, that, and the other thing. But, you know, it was a quick conclave. It really was. So, you know, we can give them kudos for that. And, you know, all the crowds were hanging out in St. Peter's Square, you know, and apparently it was pretty rainy with some, you know, cold rain. So they were out there braving the cold rain. But on another note, make sure that you join former U.S. Navy SEAL Carl Higbee on The Sound of Freedom with Hig and Resch, Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central. You've probably seen Carl on Fox and Friends. He's the well-known author of Battle on the Home Front, and an outspoken critic of the Obama administration. That alone means he fits right in here. So listen to The Sound of Freedom with Carl Higbee and former Navy JAG attorney Guy Reschenthaler, Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. So anyways, we are talking about the new Pope, and if you have a comment or if you want to share your opinion, please feel free to call in at 718-305-7176. We have a new Pope today, and, you know, the whole world has been on Pope watch ever since Tuesday, but they got the job done, and now we have Pope Francis from Argentina. And I just, you know, I think it's cool that he's only got one lung. It's like, that's one more thing that, you know, it mentioned in a news report, you know, he's slowing down a little bit, but, you know, he's sharp, he's ready to go, and I can see him, you know, offering that up as a token of suffering. You know, we Catholics like to offer up, you know, any physical or suffering or anything else for the sake of others. So I'm really excited about seeing what Pope Francis is going to do. And like I said, this is the first Pope Francis. There has not been a Pope Francis before. So I think it's really exciting to you know, pave the road going ahead. And we can only look to see, you know, what he's going to do with maybe some issues that need to be addressed in the church. And take on the whole world religion at the age of 74. I admire that. You know, where most people are well into retirement by then, or at least definitely paring down. And here's this guy stepping up to be the leader of a world religion. So lots of prayers for the Pope. And but coming up in the show, we're going to be talking about guns here in a minute and some of the hysteria going on with with guns at schools and how students are being suspended over a mere image of a gun. We also have, at the top of the next hour, a great guest, Sister Helena Burns, will be calling in to talk about Pope John Paul's The Theology of the Body. But I got to take a quick break, but we'll be talking more about the news in just a sec. So hang tight, we'll be right back. Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationradio.org, you're a conservative. You love America and our Constitution just like we do. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from books to bumper stickers and patriotic t-shirts to flags. And your pipeline to that good stuff is right here at conservativenationradio.org. Just go to our website, conservativenationradio.org, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative revolution needs. Wave your flag proudly and display your love for America and the conservative revolution starting right now. Just go to conservativenationradio.org and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution. Real conservatism for real conservatives.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live united. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on the very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living united feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, then you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
And we're back. This is the Warrior Catholic Show on conservativenationradio.org. I am Chris Ricketts, your host. If you want to be a participant in today's show, which I highly encourage, the number is 718-305-7176. We were just talking about the new Pope and how exciting that is, and looking forward to see how the Catholic Church moves forward. But right now, I want to turn our attention to the other side of the news. And on the Warrior Catholic Show, I enjoy mixing the church and the state. You know, we talk about politics and you know, regular secular news, and then we bring in the talk about Catholic Church as well. So, you know, I like being able to do that, you know, because we're not supposed to mix the church and the state. So anything I can do to tick off the liberals, you know, I'm all for it. So, have you been following any of the gun fiascos in schools lately? Well, it's a little ridiculous. Students being suspended for merely displaying or having an image of a gun. It's this these zero tolerance policies in schools are rather ridiculous. it's this hyper hysteria and paranoia that's been, you know, it's been kind of forced into the schools. And, you know, people are going to be, I don't blame people at a school for being maybe a little more vigilant, especially after these school shootings and everything else. But what we're doing now is kind of ridiculous. And I have an article here from Town Hall, and it lists 10 different instances of gun hysteria, and I want to read a couple of them to you. It's really ridiculous. In Michigan, a school confiscated cupcakes decorated with toy soldiers. A woman made a batch of cupcakes for her son's classmates. Her 9-year-old son decorated them with plastic soldier figurines. But the mother was called shortly after delivering them and was told they couldn't be served because the soldiers had guns. Really? What were they going to have? Flowers? Feel free to call in 718-305-7176. And here's another one that recently made news in Maryland. Go figure, land of the libs. A Pop-Tart pistol. A 7-year-old gets suspended for gun-shaped pastry. The child claims he tried to make it into the shape of a mountain, but it turned out looking more like a gun. Obviously, he was suspended for 2 days. Oh, and by the way, students are being offered counseling services if they were troubled by the pastry incident. So the kid was eating a Pop-Tart. He wanted to be an artist. And so he was nibbling that pastry into what he thought was the shape of a mountain. But since it looked more like a gun, and a teacher thought she overheard him holding it and saying, bang, bang, someone could have been injured by a flying crumb in the eye or something. So obviously he needed to be suspended for 2 days. In Colorado, a 7-year-old boy reportedly faces suspension for tossing an imaginary grenade. You know, he was just trying to save the world from evil forces, but apparently that flies in the face of the school's no weapons, real or imaginary, policy. He doesn't understand why he was suspended either. This is just absolute silliness. In Maryland again, a 6-year-old boy was suspended for pointing one of his fingers like a gun. He was suspended. You know, and the author of the article says, soon 6-year-old children will be forced to sit indoors playing sensitivity training and delivering PowerPoint lectures to each other on safety within the home and workforce best practices. Oh, it gets better. In Illinois, a student was ordered to remove his U.S. Marines t-shirt due to gun imagery or face suspension. This is a 14-year-old who had worn the shirt many times before without incident. The imagery in question shows two intersecting rifles below the word Marines. It'd be kind of hard to find a Marines shirt without that imagery because that's what they have on there. I mean, a picture of a gun might cause someone to be offended. So obviously he needs to, you know, he should have just been suspended, you know, obviously, and not just threatened with it. In Washington, well, this might be good. Pasco School District overturns 6-year-old suspension for discussing a toy gun. But how did it come to suspension in the first place? The child was talking about the Nerf guns his family bought during a recent family vacation. Yes, those Nerf guns are pretty dangerous, and the fact that he was talking about them could make someone nervous. But at least his suspension was overturned. The fact that it got there in the first place is up for another topic. All right, so we move on to Michigan. Lance Cruz High School had a security scare Tuesday morning. Right. A former student who works at the Air National Guard base, which is less than 5 miles away, entered the school looking for a letter of recommendation. Concerns were raised because he was dressed in camouflage. Oh my. Well, someone call in the National Guard. Oh wait, he was there already. So anyways, we go on to Pennsylvania. The schools were locked down over an ambiguous message taken as a threat. Now, that ambiguous message was a phone message that included a quote from the theme song to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air that says, "And I'll shoot in some b-ball outside of the school." I loved that show when I was younger. Anyways, the schools in the county were on lockdown for 20 minutes as a result of a receptionist misunderstanding the message and calling police over the threat. We're going to go on. In Arizona, Florence student suspended over picture of gun. A high school student was suspended because he made the desktop background on his school-issued computer a picture of a gun on top of a flag. Now, why would he do such a terrible thing? He's interested in joining the military. They might want to tell them that the military has guns. I mean, they might have to spell it G-U-N because saying it, it might offend someone. And one more. In Florida, a high school student reportedly suspended over disarming gunmen. This is the craziest one. A student wrestled a loaded gun away from a 15-year-old who was allegedly pointing the firearm at another student and threatening to shoot. By any account, what this student did was heroic, and rather than being praised, he's being punished. It's really kind of sad that someone who pretty much could have sacrificed his own life and wrestled this gun away from the gunman. This was a real gun, not a picture of a gun, not a toy soldier on a birthday cake, or anything else. It was a real gun, and another student stopped what could have been a terrible disaster. And yet, the student who's the hero was suspended. I've got a caller here. American Views, how's it going?
Good evening, how are you?
Pretty good, how are you?
We're not doing too bad.
What's your comment, sir?
You know, when I was younger, and of course that's probably a lot many years before you were younger, we were kind of encouraged to go outside and play.
Yeah.
Cops and robbers and cowboys and Indians. What the hell has gone on with this country?
At this point, I couldn't even tell you.
There's no sense of fun for these kids. I mean, you want to get a kid in trouble because he didn't follow proper Pop-Tart eating etiquette. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we going to do? Are we going to get rid of Florida and Idaho because if you spin their states the correct way, the silhouettes look like a gun?
It's pretty intimidating. I don't know. Seriously.
You know, it's sad that these teachers have so overreacted and gone so far off the deep end. And yet, when something important needs to be addressed, such as educating our children the proper way, you know, it's just, what's the right curriculum? Or maybe we should try for bigger tenure and fight for our negotiating rights, so let's walk out the door and forget the kids. That's okay.
Yeah.
But they come in and have a little bit of fun. You know, what are we going to do? Is the next thing going to be put out by the school district? You know, a ban list of weapons. You know, we're going to outlaw super soakers because they look like ARs.
They kind of do, yeah. Someone might be intimidated. You know, it's serious.
Yeah, or maybe we'll let the super soakers go, but we can't have a half gallon chamber. We'll have to keep it down to a 10-ounce chamber.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Exactly. No, that's a great point. You know, if we're going to ban guns, we might as well limit the size of magazines in the super soakers too. Or, you know, absolutely. You know, might as well keep going with it.
Yeah, you know, it's just there's some school districts now that are starting to put out some in some state legislatures too. They're putting out some limitations on this punishment to reel in the out of controlness of political correctness. And it's got to start somewhere. I mean, fortunately there was a judge who came to his total senses in New York the other day and stopped Michael Bloomberg with his soda ban. And, you know, of course Bloomberg will fight it and that's fine. Let's waste taxpayers' money in court over whether or not we can drink our soda pop or not.
Well, the fact that that came out of New York, you know, a New York judge shot that down, that's that gives a glimmer of hope for New York after all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and even today, I mean, this morning in Massachusetts, I mean, as liberal as a liberal state goes, shot down the gun law in Massachusetts. So banning guns got knocked out. And everybody thought that was a state that was going to go and pass it. So that gives you hope that there's going to be some people who are going to smarten up.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, I don't see Feinstein's bill getting through anyway. I think it'll just play, you know, it'll go through the political cycle, and eventually it'll die.
Well, we can only hope. Well, I got to take a break, so but thank you for your call, sir. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, folks, more on this issue right after the quick break here, so don't go away. More on this.
Are you tired of your hard-earned money going to support liberal and progressive enterprises? I know I am. That's why I shop at thethirdlantern.com. This conservative marketplace ensures that your money is well spent and supports conservative entrepreneurs dedicated to making their products here in America. Look, I'm a business owner. I know how hard it can be to get your product out there. Get on his vendors list, and it will help your sales. I have had his barbecue sauce. It is amazing. Check out the website, thethirdlantern.com. That's the number 3, RD, lantern.com. Send your liberal friends there and tell them Higg and Resch sent you. thethirdlantern.com. Put your money where your ideology is.
Okay, forest animals, today is a new day. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow.
Yes?
Have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. Okay, river.
Dude.
How's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man. Perfect for a little riverside shoeless relaxation.
Ah, good. Owl, you here?
Cool. Who's asking?
I am. Look, you know the drill. Sleep during the day, scare the kids at night.
Perfect. I love my job.
Oak tree?
Sup?
Still in the same place I left you last year. That's what I like, consistency.
Well, it's not like I'm going anywhere for the next couple hundred years.
I know. I love it. Turtle. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. You'd think he would have learned by now to leave the night before our meetings. Okay. Squirrel. Has anybody seen Mr. Squirrel?
The forest has been preparing just for you. Visit a forest near you today. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
And we're back. This is the Warrior Catholic Show. I'm Chris Ricketts, your host. Proud part of conservativenationradio.org. If you want to be a part of the show, and I'd love to hear from you, the number is 718-305-7176. Talking about the gun hysteria that is going on right now in public schools, and I just read off a whole bunch of different stories that have come from several different states, two from Maryland. There's a shocker. But we're just talking about how it's absolutely insane. It is this reactionary, knee-jerk hysteria to anything gun-like. Now, when we're doing that, it's almost like making it more appealing almost. Ooh, the adults don't even want us to have a picture of this. Now I'm really going to go check out. Look, as our last caller pointed out, you know, And I can identify, when I was a kid too, my friends and I would run around with our air rifles, as in, you know, imaginary, or our fingers, shooting each other. Me and a buddy of mine used to play Terminator, and we'd go around shooting each other with whatever automatic weapons we could dream up. Now, apparently that this would be cause for serious counseling in today's world, and you know, reading these stories also makes me really glad that you know, I homeschool my kids, because you know, I have a daughter and three sons. Look, every single night it turns into WrestleMania around here. My boys just attack each other. They pile on. They have imaginary weapons. They even got a bunch of Nerf guns for Christmas. They love to shoot each other. That's what boys do. Seriously. And to all of a sudden be coming up with all this sensitivity training and all the counseling for a Pop-Tart related incident, it's absolutely ludicrous. And it's denying children, especially boys, that a necessary out. You know, cops and robbers, cowboys and Indians, playing soldiers. I mean, how many of you out there can remember doing those things when you were boys, when you were children? I mean, and there would always and there would be a damsel in distress that we'd have to rescue that the bad guys were holding in their secret hideout. You know, that's what kids do. That's what boys do. You know, and boys, even at that young age, boys are loaded with testosterone. That makes them, you know, a little bit more aggressive, and taking that aggression out in mock fighting and everything is perfectly fine and natural. There's nothing wrong with it. It's built into the it's hardwired in a boy's brain. This tendency to want to go and attack things and be the hero and come to the rescue. Now, you know, there. Of course, don't get me wrong. I know there are plenty of girls out there that play cops and robbers as well. But this is just—it's essential to childhood, playing games that might involve risk and daring and adventure. And you know, those things are setting up, kids for later on in life when there might be real problems to solve. And all that play is leading somewhere. But we have liberals who come in and just ruin all of that because, someone might be intimidated or offended. Now, of course, not every kid is going to want to play imaginary fight games with imaginary guns, but a lot of them sure do. And we're coming in and we're telling them there's something wrong with them. We're giving them the impression that, hey, this is somehow you are bad for thinking this. You know, you have a picture of a gun on your shirt, you're bad. That's wrong. You're a bad person. What kind of impression is that giving to this kid? You know, it's giving them an idea that there's something inherently wrong with them, and they're going to be growing up with that mindset. So, thanks, liberals. You're actually harming our kids. A little bit more by giving them that impression that they're somehow bad or wrong for being interested in guns or just playing fight games. I mean, that kid tossed an imaginary grenade. You know, seriously, I can tell you, I myself have tossed quite a few imaginary grenades in my time. You know, my friend and I, like I said, we were always, shooting each other and, playing war. You know, recess was a time of all kinds of games. We have a great comment in the chat room here. You know, the reasoning behind this behavior, and this is from CA Living, thanks for the comment, it's to remove the masculinity from men so that when the NWO takes place, no one will defend themselves against the regime. Possibly. But there definitely, I can agree with you, definitely there's an assault on masculinity, especially. The more boys act like boys and the more men act like men, the more liberals complain about it. NWO meaning New World Order, too. Definitely there's an assault on masculinity. Teaching boys to be, these wimpy metrosexual guys that play video games in mama's basement when they're 35, is that the next thing? I mean, we should ban Call of Duty as well. You know, that's a that all All I know a lot of people that play that game, and you can play it online, and all you do is go around digitally massacring each other. I've maybe played it once. I really don't have time for video games, but I know a lot of guys who are rather obsessed with it, and so maybe we should ban that too for its gun imagery and how it promotes aggressiveness. When I don't see how aggressive some of these couch potato dudes are sitting there when you know in their mid-30s, and playing all these video games, but that's a whole other topic. But to take on this removal of, you know, fun and play from children, it's ridiculous. I can almost envision handbooks for proper recess etiquette coming out. Now there is another story about this. This is from Maryland. It's kind of interesting. It's a bill proposed that saying that students who form their fingers in the shape of a gun would not be suspended. Now, it's from Baltimore CBS, local, and zero tolerance for zero tolerance. That's how one lawmaker feels about young children being suspended from school for forming their fingers or food in the shape of a gun. As Gigi Barnett explains, he has a bill designed to keep students in class if they're caught. See, right away, I don't like the premise of that. If they're caught. Caught doing what? Caught doing what? By the way, the number is, if you have an opinion, 718-305-7176. Caught doing what? Now, State Senator J.B. Jennings says he does not intend for this bill to be a part of the growing gun debate in Maryland, but he does say he wants it to bring some common sense discipline to state schools. And then the article mentions the Pop-Tart gun eating incident. They're trying to protect that. It's really sad that there needs to be a law that combats this. You know, whatever happened to what I'm going to refer to now as uncommon sense? I mean, it should be common sense, but it's really kind of uncommon now. So uncommon sense, it's we need a law now that tells schools that they can't suspend people for gun imagery. Now, Jennings also says that his office has received several calls from parents who fear that a suspension in elementary school will mar their children's academic career, and that's very true. You know, someone does something innocent like that, and all of a sudden has something on their academic record. Now, conservatives like things to be predictable, dependable, and reliable, and like the true anchors they are, Michael Smith and Bing Fisher still roll out Soldiers of Patriotism Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central. Hey, it wouldn't be conservativenationradio.org without Michael B. and Uncle Bing now, would it? Don't miss our signature show, Soldiers of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. So we're talking about this bill in Maryland that it's really sad that they actually need. They obviously, it's so bad in Maryland, they obviously need a bill, a law that's going to prevent teachers from suspending students who might form their fingers into the shape of a gun or eating their food into the shape of a gun or something similar. Now, here's the catch, though, that really still gets me all riled up. If the bill passes and a student is caught forming their food or fingers in the shape of a gun, they would be sent to a counselor's office first, not suspension. Sent to a counselor's office? Again, for what? What is this poor 7-year-old boy who ate his Pop-Tart into what looked like the shape of a gun going to need counseling for? He's going to need counseling? Again, that's sending the message. There's something wrong with you for thinking like this. There's something, you're a bad person. You need to be fixed. We need this counselor here to fix you, because you're all of a sudden, you know, you're a bad person. Now, that it's absolutely ridiculous. I got to take a quick break, but more on this. Don't go away.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck as a gift to Dave 2037, so he can spend it on things like anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman, something cool like that. I think Dave 2037 deserves it. He worked hard. What are you getting Steve 2037?
I guess I was thinking Steve 2037 would just fend for himself.
Well, all right, but don't expect to be borrowing my anti-gravity boots.
You want to have money in your future? You got to start saving now. Putting some money from every paycheck into a savings account or contributing to your 401k can make a big difference later. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org. Hey, let's just hope Steve 2037 doesn't get his hands on a cold time machine, because he is going to come back here and knock some sense into you.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it, but he just throws it. Again! I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Howdy, folks. This is the Warrior Catholic Show. I am Chris Ricketts, your host. And if you want to be a part of the program, please feel free to call at 718-305-7176. The Warrior Catholic Show is a proud member of ConservativeNationRadio.org. We've been talking about the gun hysteria that is kind of everywhere in public schools. Students being suspended for merely forming their fingers in the shape of a gun. Or even worse, being suspended for wrestling a real loaded gun away from another person. Now, that's absolutely ridiculous. The fact that the student was involved in a gun-related incident is why he was suspended. Forget that he's a hero and probably saved multiple lives. He needs to be suspended and punished because he was involved in an incident with a gun. It's absolutely ridiculous. Now, again, if you have a comment, please call in at 718-305-7176. Coming up at the top of next hour, we have Sister Helena Burns of the Daughters of St. Paul calling in, and she will be talking to us for that whole hour about Pope John Paul II's theology of the body. Maybe I'll get her take on the new pope. So stay tuned. That's all coming up ahead. But right now, it's the gun hysteria is it's sending that message to people, to children, that there's something wrong with them. You know, especially boys are naturally aggressive. You know, my three boys every night, like I said, they tackle each other. They jump on each other. They find weapons and they act like, you know, they're ravenous beasts or they're soldiers shooting each other. They have get into great arguments over who's dead and who's not. My daughter just sits there and rolls her eyes. She's the oldest, so you know, oldest, and then she has three brothers, so at least she's got that going for her. But you know, it's just funny to watch. And if I were to come in and tell my boys, you know, you can't do that; it's too aggressive. You know, it would be cutting them off at the knees. It would be telling them that there's something inherently wrong with them. And a comment in the chat room, So someone was saying that his daughters do that too. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've definitely seen I've definitely seen girls throw in with the mix and you know, take out, you know, tackle a lad as he's trying to save the world. Definitely happens. But that kind of behavior is definitely ingrained in a boy's mind in a it's just the way they are. Now, getting rid of it and telling them that they're bad is absolutely the worst thing you can do. Maybe directing it eventually into a more you know, constructive over time, maybe that's a little bit better. But going in and telling children that they are inherently bad for having a picture of a gun on their T-shirt is definitely I think that's harming children. So there you go. Liberals are harming children with these zero tolerance policies. I want to move on to a couple of other headlines now quickly from the secular side of things before we talk to Sister Burns. This is from FoxNews.com. The sequester cuts hit tuition for soldiers and aid for homeless veterans. That's right. The huge, terrible sequester of 2013. It is now, you know, the one that the White House and the Obama administration wants to be as painful as possible. They want to make you hurt. They want you to feel the effects. They don't want to try to spread their money around and be responsible. No, Obama wants you to feel it. And why? So you can come clamoring back and say, please give us more money. We need more money. That's what he's after. But the $85 billion in cuts that went into effect at the beginning of the month will not spare soldiers and veterans, with a wave of cuts being announced for tuition assistance and a program that helps homeless veterans get back on their feet. Now, the Pentagon for months warned that the sequester cuts would be catastrophic, but the Defense Department is not the only federal agency with problems for servicemen and women that are vulnerable. Under a federal housing program that helps roughly 100,000 Americans, homeless and formerly homeless veterans will lose assistance due to the sequester. The program is run by the Department of Housing and Urban Development and provides state grants to help veterans get housing. Now, this is... I mean, obviously Obama's not going to touch any of the entitlement programs. He's not going to take, you know, food stamps away or do anything to reform entitlement spending. No. I mean, anytime they want to cut anything, it's going to come out of the military and the veterans. You know, the liberals, they don't like the military. And the sequester isn't that huge of a deal. I went into great length over it. In my last show? Looks like we have a caller here. We have 317. Hello, you're on the Warrior Catholic Show.
I wasn't actually calling to be on the show, but...
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I had to leave the house for a little bit, go pick up my daughters.
All right. Well, I can just put you on mute unless you have a comment real quick.
Okay. Well, I can go ahead and just listen for a little bit, and then if I need to talk, I guess I can let you know somehow.
All right. Thanks for listening. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anyway, so we're talking about the sequester and how it really is about a 2% cut, which, you know, pretty much it's taking the expansion in, you know, the government growth and spending from last year and limiting it to less than what they wanted this year. They're still spending more than last year, but I went over that in more depth in last week, so I won't rehash it all. But, you know, but they're making it painful, and they're hitting soldiers, the tuition assistance, and also you know, the helping homeless veterans. You know, it's okay though. At least everyone will get their food stamps. So this is really kind of sick. And, you know, it always bothers me. You know, I was in the Marine Corps for 8 years, and you know, anytime I am all for supporting veterans and supporting the troops. You know, and these people put their lives on the line, and they also make a sacrifice. You know, so, some of these people that, you know, a high school graduate, a young man, a young woman who joins the military is giving up a significant part of their early life in service to their country, where most of their peers are going off to college to get their degree and, you know, get a career and all that good stuff. These young men and women are giving up a part of their life in service to the country. And to come in and to cut from these programs that are helping these people who earn it, who give up part of their lives and sometimes give up their lives, you know, it's really that bothers me. It really does. And, you know, I'm not just talking as a veteran and I want my own. You know, these are young people, and, you know, these are people that give up and some put in a whole career, you know, 20 plus years in the military. And they're giving up a significant part of their life in service to the country. So I think they earn that tuition assistance. I think they earn, you know, that help, you know, getting their lives together after the military. You know, it's sad that the liberals are always first to cut from the armed forces and programs that might help with that help homeless veterans. You know, a lot of veterans that come out of the military, you know, seeing combat and whatnot, and they might be experiencing, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, or, you know, any other number of things. And to come in and just cut programs that can help these veterans, it's a total disservice and disrespect to those that have given up their lives and a part of their lives in service to this nation. So I find that really reprehensible that, but, you know, the Democrats are all about buying votes through entitlement programs. You know, we're gonna cut from the military, and it's a slap in their face. So that really irks me when that happens. Now, in other news, this is from ABC News. Obama had an exclusive interview with ABC News yesterday, and he rejected calls to balance the federal budget in the next 10 years, and instead argued that his primary economic concern was not balancing the budget, but rather growing the economy. Quote,
"My goal is not to chase a balanced budget just for the sake of balance. My goal is how do we grow the economy, put people back to work, and if we do that, we are going to be bringing in more revenue," he said.
I don't even know what to say to that, to tell you the truth. So he doesn't want to balance the budget just for the sake of balancing it, but he wants to grow the economy and have more revenue. The federal government is set to take a record revenue. I covered that a couple weeks ago too. I think it's like possibly $2.7 trillion in taxes this year. So I don't think they have a revenue problem. You know, but for her to, I don't know what alternate reality this guy's living in. He doesn't want to balance the budget, but he wants to grow the economy. So apparently saddling the economy with debt is somehow okay. Somehow, you know, growing the deficit and heaping debt on you know, our children and our grandchildren, somehow that's going to grow the economy. Interesting. I don't see what reality this guy's living in. I got to take a quick break. I see caller 312. I see you there. I got to take a break, but I'll get to you when we come back. More after this.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Catholic Show. I am Chris Ricketts, your host. I see we have a caller here. It's unmuting now. 312, hello.
Hi, Chris. It's Sister Helena.
Ah, Sister. Sorry, I don't have a call screener, so I couldn't officially bring you on. But let me, now that you're already here, let me introduce you.
Okay, great.
All right, guys. This is the awesome nun I was telling you about, Sister Helena Burns. She is a member of the Daughters of St. Paul, and they primarily use media, books, the internet, movies, TV, whatever they can to spread the gospel of Christ, which is absolutely awesome. Sister Burns is on Twitter. She's on Facebook. She's rocking it out. So, you know, it's really great to have you on this evening, Sister. Thank you.
Thank you. It's so anticlimactic now with our new pope. I mean, who's even listening? Everyone's probably glued to EWTN.
Yeah.
But I don't mind being upstaged by Pope Francis I.
Exactly.
Wow.
Well, last week it was Rand Paul's filibuster in the Senate, and this week it's the new pope. I prefer the new pope, to tell you the truth.
Yes. And I do need to tell you that I don't normally go on, you know, any kind of political shows. So you're a first for me. Just to let it be known that, you know, as sisters, we don't do partisan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't label ourselves conservative, liberal. It just doesn't apply. Like N/A for us, because we are called. That's the secular realm. That's what a lay person is called to do. Absolutely, to transform the best way they know how. You know,
mm-hmm.
the secular world and through politics and all that kind of stuff. I mean, sometimes I even see lay people who, like, shrink back, like, ooh, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not called to that, and that's fine. But to say as though, like, well, I'm a Catholic or a Christian and I shouldn't do that, it's like, oh, no, that is your realm.
Well, get in there now. We need you.
To be doing, you know. But we don't. It's so funny because a friend of ours, he was going around telling everybody because they were – we were traveling with him, and people were like, oh, you know, you're with the nuns, and so what, you know, party are the nuns? And he's Republican, so he was telling everybody, oh, the nuns are Republican. And we said,
ew.
Bill, we were like, Bill, what are you saying? We're not. We're all independent. My order, we're all independent. You know, of course, sometimes, depending on the state, you have to sign up for either party, whoever you're voting for, however that works. But we're all independent. We don't, you notice we don't tweet political stuff. We don't,
mm-hmm.
certainly, you know, principles, absolutely, and the church's social teaching, et cetera, but, of course, there's no party that subscribes to every single Catholic teaching.
Absolutely.
It falls on different sides, and there is a hierarchy of values, so, you know, we have to choose very carefully which party or whatever that we go with or candidate, depending on that hierarchy of values. So, because certain, they're not all the same. You know, I don't know, I'll just give you a quick, like if, I should make something up so it doesn't, like, okay, some guy wants to, or gal wants to do away with chewing gum, and you believe in chewing gum, and you love chewing gum. But, you know, the alternative, and you want to vote against this person, but they're pro-life. You know, I would probably go with the pro-life side of that person rather than the anti-chewing gum side of that person.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So that's my little statement on politics tonight.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, on this show, I like to talk about both, you know, mixing the church and state, or at least discussing the two of them. But I have to say, you are definitely the first nun ever to be on the show, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I
guess I'm a warrior nun tonight, huh?
You are a warrior
Catholic show.
You are a warrior nun, and you know, we're the church militant, so that's kind of my theme for the show. You know, everyone's required, you know, we're all warrior Catholics and need to be in our own capacity.
Right.
So, so can you tell us a little bit about your journey with the Daughters of St. Paul, maybe what you were planning to do before God said, I've got other plans for you, or whatnot?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. Actually, I was planning to be an ornithologist, which is a person who studies birds.
Oh, wow.
Always loved nature as a small child. Everybody knew that Helena was going to do something with animals, the environment. I was big time into conservation.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to, you know, work with endangered species. I especially wanted to specialize in birds of prey because I thought that was kind of cool. And, I was going to spend my life, you know, outdoors climbing trees and counting bird eggs and, you know, doing all really great stuff like that. And, of course, that's still very much in my heart, but I didn't really know God till I was 15. I didn't really believe in anything till I was 15. It's kind of a long story, a long journey. And but as a teenager, I was really searching. And I was a cradle Catholic, dragged to Mass by my parents on Sundays.
Yeah.
Hated it every minute of it, pretty much. But then I really got kind of desperate. I was more of a deist. Like, I believed in... I grew up in Boston, so I actually did have a very, like, pro-American, we studied the Revolutionary War every single year in every single grade. I've spoken to, like, my sisters across the country, and it's hilarious because depending on where you're from, you tend to just focus on that part of American history. Our sisters from the West, like California, they just studied the covered wagons every year, the Wild West and the founding of the West. And actually, the state of California has to do, in the public schools, they do Father Junipero Serra all the time. They have to do projects and stuff and learn about kind of like the founding of California. Our sisters in Louisiana, they learned about the Louisiana Purchase and that history and the War of 1812 over and over every year. So I had a very, like, very much like freedom, fight for your rights. That was the kind of upbringing I had, you know, freedom of thought. My home state, Massachusetts. You know what we're like, right? So, you know, and it was good, though. It was really good. I went to public schools, and I gained a lot of really wonderful stuff. Our little town was Belmont, Massachusetts, and people used to move to our town just to get the education. It was so good. We had some amazing teachers, and our parents just instilled in us, all of us, a love of learning. It wasn't to get a good grade. It wasn't to get a job. It wasn't to get ahead. It was simply the love of learning and becoming like a cultured person and becoming somebody who knew something and could be an interesting conversationalist. I mean, it was just an idyllic little town and little upbringing.
Well, that's great. And a lot of people don't have that love of learning these days. It's pretty good.
No, I know. And it's, you know, I think the public schools have changed so much too. It's really so much agendaized education that, you know, I used to think to myself, I would consider homeschooling if I was a parent. And now I feel like I would have to homeschool simply because of what's going on. But I remember I always believed in a creator. Like, I believed there was a creator God, but not Jesus, not the Trinity, not a personal God, a force. The force be with you. You know, it was it was this force. And very far away, you know, that watchmaker God, the God very, very along the deist lines, the watchmaker God who sort of created the world and then stepped back and was no longer involved in the world, couldn't hear prayers, wasn't really concerned about us, like made us, yes, in his image, but that means we're responsible. Everything is up to us. And when I was taught to pray as a child, I thought that was the cheesiest thing in the world. Like, really? So if I pray for something, I'm going to get it. That's not what happens. People pray that so-and-so doesn't die and so-and-so dies.
Yeah.
People are praying conflicting prayers of what they want. So who wins? Who gets what they want out of that prayer? I didn't really have this concept of anything besides asking in prayer. Although, you know, like my parents did teach us to do intercessory prayer, and we used to have a litany every night. We'd say our little prayers, and we had memorized all the people to pray for, people who were sick, people who had died, relatives, et cetera, et cetera. So that was really nice. So there was this concept of, like, beyond yourself. But so one night I remember asking friends, and nobody could give me an answer, like, why am I alive? What is the purpose of life? It seemed like a real, like, futile thing to have all these hopes and dreams, and you just die, and you don't
yeah.
really fulfill them. I didn't, you know, believe in heaven or anything like that. It was just kind of the end when you died. And, you know, what about the poor people on the other side of the world or poor people in your city? Like, oh, God loves me. I thank God for my home and my food and my family. What about people who don't have all that? Like, nothing made sense. Nothing made sense to me. So at a certain point, I got really desperate, and I remember thinking, I was very depressed, but it wasn't like a typical teenage depression or clinical depression. It was existential depression. I did not know why I was alive, and it seemed like a real bother to me to go through all of this. And it doesn't make sense. It's meaningless, purposeless. You're not going to achieve your goals anyway, or maybe a few of them. It's not really up to you, because life doesn't work out the way you want to. You, no matter how strong your will is, you can't make things happen. You know, necessarily. So I remember one night kneeling by my bed and just praying to this God thing, saying, you know, like, like, oh, God, if you exist, like, literally, this is my prayer. Oh, God, if you exist, you have to help me. If you can hear me, if you're that kind of a God, you've got to help me, because I don't know why I'm alive and I don't want to go on living anymore. Like, I started to, like, lose interest in everything. I didn't even care about birds anymore.
Oh, my.
It was bad. It was that bad. And so I just went to bed, and the next morning I got up and had the most incredible sense of God's presence. I could feel his love for me. I knew he was real. A lot of my questions were answered without, you know, without reading a book or talking to somebody. I knew that death wasn't the end, that heaven was real. It just all came to me, like what we would now call infused knowledge. I know that now that that's like God answering your prayer directly, answering mm-hmm. your questions within you. And it was like night and day. I mean, if that's what some atheists feel, it's like, I know what that feels like, that emptiness, the loneliness, the darkness, really feeling that you're alone in the universe. And, I mean, maybe not all atheists feel that way, but if that's how they feel, I really feel bad for them. It's a horrible feeling, and I would never in a trillion years go back to that ever.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think maybe God waited for me to pray. Like, he could have helped me otherwise, but it was like he was showing me the importance of prayer and the idea that he's real. And when I communicate with him, he'll communicate back. So from that moment on, like, my life changed. And that sense of his presence and his love has never left me. And I knew that heaven was real, death was not the end, and that it didn't really matter exactly what I did with my life. Like, I didn't have to make a lot of money. I didn't have to be successful. I didn't have to be famous. The point of life was God is waiting for me in heaven. It's not that I can't wait to go to heaven and be with God. God can't wait for me to go be with him.
Wow.
Wow. But that's not just for me. That's for everybody.
Yeah.
So it's like, wow. And then I got my vocation like 4 days later.
Wow. Everything was high speed for you.
Yeah. I'm kind of an intense person, I guess. People tell me I am. I don't think I am, but they tell me I am. So,
that's a good thing, though.
Yeah. And that's what really drew me to our founder, Blessed James Alberione. At the time, he died in 1971. He's an Italian priest. And he was only servant of God at the time, but after, like, 4 days later, when it was really literally kind of like this voice, be a nun. And because people say it's not a lightning bolt experience, and for a lot of people, I'm sure it's not. It unfolds in a more ordinary way, but for me, everything was lightning bolt, you know? And so I started looking into different orders. I didn't really know what it meant to be a nun either. Like, I didn't really grow up with nuns. I knew it was like a total commitment, serving God, serving his people, exclusive love relationship with Jesus. I kind of got that. But when I looked into the different orders, I liked a lot of different orders. So it took a while for me to pare it down to Daughters of St. Paul, but I fell in love with this priest, Father Alberione, who really understood us modern people. I said, finally. As I was learning about the other saints little by little, I liked them all, but he was this guy who understood technology and media in a particular way and embraced it and was like, we don't have to be afraid. God hasn't moved. God is still everywhere. You know, just because we invent these modern technologies, like, he doesn't go like, well, I guess the game's up. they've discovered technology, so I'm sitting back here in the Middle Ages, you know, and I'm not a part of this new, shiny new world. It's like, no, he's way ahead of this world already. You know, he's at the end of it. But so his drive to reach people today, to reach people where they're really at, not like pretend worlds, but like real world stuff. I just loved his understanding of modern people. I love that about him.
Sister, if you could hold that thought real quick, I got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Nobody go anywhere. This is a great story.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Confusion ever someone or have sudden...
Have you ever had sudden confusion, trouble speaking, or understanding someone?
It could be one of the 5 signs of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Suddenly having trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
Don't wait. Call 911 immediately.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
The Internet's official Rhino Hunting Safari.
And we're back. This is the Warrior Catholic Show. I am Chris Ricketts, your host, a proud member of ConservativeNationRadio.org, and we are talking with Sister Helena Burns, who is telling us her conversion story and how she was drawn to the Daughters of St. Paul. So, Sister, you're telling us you were drawn to Father Alberione.
I was, and here I am now making a documentary on his life, MediaApostle.com. You can go and watch the trailer in 10 languages already and counting.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so we've had this tie, Father Alberione and I, from the earliest days of my knowing God and being called to religious life. So every so often it took me 2 years to discern my vocation, so I would turn against it and I would throw all the literature out that I got from the nuns, all the different orders. but I would never throw out his stuff, his holy cards and the little booklets on his life, because I love this guy. And he was intense. I was drawn to his intensity. He was super intense. So here's this interesting story that when I was almost giving up on my vocation at a certain point, because I was still in high school, and my parents were like, you're not going to enter out of high school. You know, you're going to go to college. You're going to get a job. You know, this is just maybe just a fling for you. I was freaking them out because they knew I wasn't very religious. And here I was like, I'm not interested in, you know, doing all this other stuff that I was planning my life to do anymore. So the sister who was in charge of vocation work at the time, Sister Sharon Ann, she had been calling young women who were in the files, and they were like paper files. And so, you know, they were married, dead, too old, moved, not interested in religious life anymore. And she was getting a little frustrated, and she looked at this little holy card of Father Alberioni, and she said, "You give me the next one." And she pulled my name out.
Oh, wow.
So when she called me, it was like the perfect, perfect timing. It was God's timing, because I was sort of drifting toward becoming a nurse, like going to nursing school. That would have been a disaster. But anyway, it was some like way of serving people. And, you know, I'm kind of squeamish. So I didn't do so well in chemistry, but it wouldn't have worked out. So she said, "Are you still thinking about becoming a sister? Do you want to stay on our mailing list and everything?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." And she goes, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, I think I'm going to wait a few years and see." And in her voice, she said, "Oh, that's too bad." And I said, "Well, what do you mean that's too bad?" She goes, "Well, you know, if God's calling you now, do you feel like he's calling you?" And I'm like, "Yes, yes." And she said, "Well, you know, if you can, you need to try to answer when you can, not just keep putting God off, because he's not going to keep calling necessarily. You know, he might say, okay, you know, because God leaves us free." And I felt like, oh, this is my moment. Like, I wanted to really seize the moment. And she said, "We're going to be in the neighborhood on Saturday. Do you want me to drop in and we can meet? I can talk to your parents." I'm like, "Yes, please, please come." So she came, and to this day, I don't know what she talked to my father about. He took her into his office, and they talked for like an hour.
Wow.
And, yeah. So, but they were impressed with her. You know, they liked her a lot, and she came with a postulant, and I got to talk to, you know, someone my own age. I was like 17 at the time. And so after that, my father still wasn't convinced, because he had to, if I was going to enter at 17, I had to have special permission, signed permission,
right,
because I was a minor. And I really, I was so ready. After, you know, 2 years of discerning, 15 to 17, I was so ready, if I could, to get started. And at that time, we would take you at 17. We don't anymore. But so I prayed. I was praying this ongoing novena, perpetual novena to Father Alberione and St. Paul the Apostle, because we're daughters of St. Paul.
That's a good combination.
It is. And my dad, he was the type of guy, like, he says no, it's no. Like, you don't change, nobody changes his mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept in touch with the sisters. We went and visited, you know, as a family. And then one day my father went over on his own with my mom, because Mother Paula wanted to talk to him, or they wanted to talk to Mother Paula, because I was keeping it up at home, like every single day. "Dad, you're going to let me enter, right? Dad, you're going to sign the papers, right? Dad, you know?" So I was in school, and I had a job after school, and my parents went over to the convent, to the mother house. Our mother house is right there in Boston. And they met Mother Paula, who was our founderess in the United States. She brought us to the States in 1932. Wonderful woman. Oh, my gosh. Northern Italian.
Oh, there you
go. Boned woman, you know, deep voice and everything. So they took a special tour, and, you know, they had some nice chats with Mother Paula. But what happened is, I'll tell you what happened first. My mother picked me up at work, and she had this really, and I knew my fate was being decided that day. And I was telling all my friends, even those who weren't religious, I'm like, "Pray, will you pray for me today?" And they're like, "Why?" I'm like, "I can't tell you." I knew my parents were deciding my fate at that moment. So my mother picked me up. It was the longest day of my life. My mother picked me up after work, and her face was so weird. I couldn't read it. And I'm like, "He's going to say no, right?" And she's like, "I'll let your father tell you."
Oh.
And I knew she didn't want me to go. But she was kind of leaving everything up to my dad, because it was easier that way. Like, she didn't have to decide, and she didn't want me to leave so young, you know. But, of course, what if I went to college the next year someplace across the country? You know, people
exactly.
forget that. People forget that, or, you know, you join the military like yourself or something. It's, you know. I got home, and my dad had a weird look on his face like I'd never seen before. And he looked at me, and he said, "You can enter in June, honey." And I just, oh, thank you, Dad. And I hugged him and everything. Well, here's what happened later. June is the month of St. Paul, too, by the way. we celebrate the whole month of St. Paul. You know, the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul is the end of the month. But we celebrate the whole month. And I found out later what happened by a sister who was an eyewitness. She said, as your parents were leaving from visiting the convent that day, Mother Paula, she had this way with men. She understood men. She would, I could tell you stories of, like, you know, construction workers and contractors that she had to deal with, and businessmen, and she understood how they thought. So she could really get what she wanted, and you know, like, she was great. She was awesome. So they said she looked, the sister said she looked my dad in the eye, and he was smiling and being all pleasant and polite, and he was waving goodbye and walking down the steps. And she looked him in the eye, and she said, she could tell he was still going to say no. And she looked him in the eye and she said, are you going to make her suffer?
And, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And his face fell. The sister told me his face fell. And because, I mean, what father wants to make his daughter suffer, right? And he knew I was suffering, because I used to kind of just happily ask him, come on, Dad, you're going to let me enter, right? And I was getting a lot more serious, like, Dad, you're going to let me enter, right? You know, it was getting pretty dire. So he said yes. And my dad was like a really good Catholic, like more than I even knew. He, you know, more stuff came out after he died about how faithful he really was, you know, and how religious and fervent he really was. But he wanted to make sure, you know, because this was a sea change for me. And again, you know, he didn't want me to go, but he was more like a bite the bullet tough guy. Like he would make that sacrifice if necessary. And and here's something that's really interesting too about Saint Therese, how she, my confirmation saint, how she helped me out. When I was talking to my mother at 15 about becoming a sister, I didn't tell my dad. I just told her, and I didn't tell my friends. And my mother said, she had this like conspiratorial look on her face, and she goes, even though she didn't want me to leave, it was like she had to tell me this. She said, well, you know, St. Therese entered the convent at 15. She got special permission from the Pope, and she entered. And I had never heard of St. Therese. You know, I was like, I knew all the Hollywood stars, but I didn't know, I couldn't name you one saint, you know. So I'm like, who's St. Therese? You know, and then I eventually took her for confirmation. But she says, well, you know, she explained the whole story. And she gave me this little novena to St. Therese. So Therese is a part of it, too. Her, you know, giving me hope that I didn't have to wait to be 23, 25. A lot of the orders at the time were all telling me I had to wait. I had to go to college. I had to, you know, have 2 years of work experience behind me, et cetera. And here, you know, I was feeling very intensely to get going with my life, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an absolutely beautiful story. Oh, my gosh. That, And I love those little signal graces that happen too. Like you were saying, you know, you said you could go in June, and that's the, you know, the month of St. Paul for you guys and everything. And I love those little quote unquote coincidences that really aren't coincidences. It's just like my wife always says God's showing off at that point.
Yeah. Well, when I entered, it was June 21st, and that was the beginning of the Our Sung Novena to St. Paul. 9 days before. See, we actually celebrate the Feast of St. Paul on June 30, all by himself. We don't want to celebrate with Peter on the 29th. The church has given us our own feast day on June 30 of St. Paul by himself for the whole Pauline family. So we started, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. We sing our prayers every day, and I thought we were going to sing to St. Paul every day. And I sat next to this sister with this gorgeous voice, and I thought, oh, my Lord, I have to be able to sing like that, too? So
can't,
I, like...
Can't sing? You're fired. Sorry. Yeah. Get out.
Get out. So I could always carry a tune, but I like, spruced up my vocal cords and, you know, got with the program there, you know? And so that was another fun little thing of... you know, the day after the actual feast day, we stopped and I'm like, why aren't we singing a St. Paul anymore? And they're like, that was a novena, silly. And, it was fun, you know, getting adjusted to religious life. We have once a month we have a retreat day. So it's a Sunday retreat day spent in silence. So I didn't, nobody tells you things. You just kind of figure them out as you go along. So I came down to the meal and nobody was talking. It was like dead silence in the refectory. And I turned to one of my fellow, I was a pre-postulant at the time, I said, "Why so glum?" And she's like, "Shh, we're on retreat." Like, oh, okay. One of the very first sisters I met when I entered was Sister Sean, who now works in our editorial department. And we had these, like, really, I think they're really gross. They're from Hawaii. They're like these, we had a lot of sisters from Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So their parents would send them little treats. And on the table there was, they're called yiklung. They're like dried up prunes or something. And they're salted. So it's like dried fruit, like caked in salt. And they love these things. And, you know, asceticism was highly prized and everything. So she's like, I put it in my mouth. I was like, ooh, this is gross. I don't want to eat this. And she's like, be a sport, make a mort. They're like mortifications, you know, these little like sacrifices you try to make during the day. Be a sport, make a mort. So, okay.
Oh, man.
So anyway, it was fun. It was really fun.
All right. Well, I got to take a hard break now, but when we come back, I'm going to ask you about a little bit of the theology of the body. We're going to have about a good 25 minutes to go into that. So,
Favorite subject.
Absolutely, and I'm sure we can go on for longer than half an hour, but that will be about what we have. So we're going to be talking about Pope John Paul II's Theology of the Body when we come back, and don't go away. ConservativeNationRadio.org is proud to be associated with the most effective identity security and credit monitoring service there is, LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock, go to conservativenationradio.org and click on the LifeLock banner. That's conservativenationradio.org. And click on the LifeLock banner.
You're gonna fly. Hi, everyone. This is Reba McIntyre for RAD. You know, I see a lot of funny things traveling all over this beautiful country of ours. But one thing that's not very funny is when someone gets in a car trying to drive when they're drunk. Take their keys away from them, because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Let me try.
Okay, just remember what I showed you.
Yep, there was a bunny who had one big ear and another big ear. They looped-a-looped, made a bow, and the bunny hopped away. I did it!
Oh, good job, kiddo. Now let's tie your other shoe.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
And we're back, folks. This is the Warrior Catholic Show on conservativenationradio.org. I am Chris Ricketts, your host, and we are talking with Sister Helena Burns from the Daughters of St. Paul. And she just told us her absolutely, it was moving to me anyway, conversion story and call to religious life. And she also talks a lot about theology of the body. That's your favorite subject, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. So we have a mixed audience here. I'm some Catholic, some not. So we got about 25 minutes. So maybe we could start off with a little bit just what is the theology of the body and why is it important, or what does it have to do with today and now?
That's a great way to frame it. Actually, what John Paul II was trying to do in writing his Theology of the Body was to correct 500 years of bad philosophy, lacking theology.
Oh,
I wouldn't
man.
Say it was bad theology, because, you know, it's the church and Christianity is not, and the Bible is not bad theology. But we always need to adapt it to our times. And what happened 500 years ago was a perfect storm. In science, philosophy, and religion, there became a spirit-matter split. so that has influenced our culture up to this day, and it's just becoming more and more influential and taking on different forms. So what happened in science back in the 1500s was the scientific revolution, and many, many wonderful things were discovered, and the scientific method helped us make a lot of progress. But what was interpreted at that point was, oh, this means we don't need God anymore. There's no God because we used to have this magical explanation for things that we didn't understand, and we said, well, that was God, or that was a miracle. But now we can explain everything. And it's like, really? Well, maybe you can explain how things work, but can we explain how everything got here and how it stays in existence and why, as Francis Collins says, why math works anyway? So we can discover a lot about the universe. That's great. Science is fantastic. We desperately need science. But to say that, what about the questions of the human heart? Science, it's out of its field then, you know. So ultimate purposes, science can't answer those questions. It's completely outside of its field at that point. So it's very important to stay in our disciplines, you know. But a lot of people blame Descartes, Rene Descartes, who was actually a fervent Catholic, died a fervent Catholic. But he was a mathematician, and he was trying to, again, explain everything, reduce the world to math. And
that sounds like a terrible world to me.
I know, unless you like math. But not even. I mean, you know, love, courage, things like this that are inexplicable. And again, a lot of people don't really care how things work, as long as they work.
Right.
It's not everyone's burning question, but everybody kind of wants to know, am I just going to die and that's the end? How should I behave in society? How should society as a whole behave, et cetera, et cetera? So there's so many other questions that lie outside the realm of science, as wonderful as science is. So there was beginning then a rise of atheism, even though many of the scientists of the day were still very fervent believers. So we have that in the science realm. Now, Descartes was also a philosopher, and he said something, I think, therefore I am. And again, he never intended to create this split that we call now a Cartesian world that we live in, where he said, you know, I really can't trust my senses, because my senses deceive me all the time. The only real world is my internal world, the world of the spirit, basically. So all I know is that I'm thinking. All I know is that I'm doubting. So I trust my inner world, because that's the only world I'm sure of. So again, we went to complete subjectivity, and there's no objective truth. But here's the thing. Stop and think about this, which is actually anti-scientific when you think about it, that world. He said, for example, in a glass of water, I put a stick, and it appears that that stick is bent. And so my senses deceive me, because that stick really isn't bent, so I can't trust my senses. And it's like, well, how did you know that stick was bent? Because you kept using your senses, and you pulled the stick out, and you said, ah, it is not bent. You know? So it's like, okay, if our senses deceive us, then we need to keep doing those scientific experiments and keep checking it out so we get to the truth. So what happened was science went all materialistic. It went to the matter side, went to the physical side, and said there is no spirit, there is no soul. We can't see it. It's called positivism. If we can't see it and measure it, it doesn't exist. Not that it's beyond the realm of science, or, you know, it's in the realm of metaphysics, or today we even have, like, there's a little bit of a convergence there with quantum theory and quantum physics, where we can't measure something. And we can't exactly predict how this, you know, the subatomic world is going to act. Maybe someday we will, though. Maybe someday we'll understand the laws of the subatomic world. You know, people say, oh, the Newtonian stuff doesn't work anymore. Well, it does. It works at a certain level. It's a good explanation at a certain level. But subatomic, no. There's, like, something else going on there. So that's what happened with science. It went to the physical. The material completely said there's no such thing as the spiritual, which then, of course, you negate God, you negate everything that way. It becomes atheistic, right? So philosophy, following Descartes, said, we're going to be completely subjective now. We are not going to reason with the material world. We're not going to deal with the material world. We're going to deal with things like epistemology only, like how do we know and what are the ways of knowing, et cetera, all just internal stuff with very little connection with the real physical world. So philosophy actually went all spiritual. And then with religion, we had the reformers, the Reformation.
Right.
And again, they didn't intend this. Nobody really intended this, and they couldn't foresee what was going to happen with all of this. Luther said there is no such thing as the visible priesthood. We are each our own priest, which of course we are in our baptism. We're priests, prophets, and kings. But he dismantled the entire sacramental system by saying it's all internal. It's all spiritual. It's only spiritual. You know, and we don't need any physical, visible anything. And in a sense, what he was really saying is God doesn't work through matter, which nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, since he's holding it in existence and all.
Yes, and because we do. And he tried to retain baptism and marriage, but actually his own theology undermined even retaining those two sacraments. So he was right about a lot of other things, and of course the church was in a horrible state of, you know, dissolution and corruption and, oh my, selling indulgences and all that crazy stuff. So he was ahead of his time in a lot of ways, things that Vatican II eventually came around to, you know, like codifying for the Catholic Church. But he was so off on this very rudimentary, not only religious worldview, but just reality worldview, you know, right there. So religion went all spiritual. So we got science all physical, philosophy all spiritual, and religion all spiritual. And this intense spirit-matter split, what does that do to the human being who is both matter and spirit? We're body and soul. That's the definition of a human person. Body mm-hmm. and soul together forever. And so people kind of made a choice one way or the other. Like, I will just become sort of super, super duper religious and spiritual, and maybe even abuse my body in the process or ignore my body in the process or say that the body is bad. I mean, that's been with us from the very, very beginning. It's no part of Judaism on which we're based. The Jews never saw the material world as evil or bad or lesser. They saw it revealing the glory of God. And then the Christians came along, and because we came from a pagan background, we had a lot more trouble with the body. And it was always, depending on what culture you came from or what religious background you came from, Gnosticism or Manichaeanism or, you know, whatever you were coming from, you kind of dragged some of that with you. And so from the very beginning, Augustine struggled with this, being that he had been a Manichaeanism, which has this dualistic view of the world, evil and good, and the evil God is as strong as the good God. And the way you deal with the body is you just say, well, it's really, really bad, and the spirit's the only good thing. And even some of the ancient Greek philosophers thought that the body was just a shell, a prison, and when you die, you're finally liberated. You get rid of this horrible thing called the body. Now, what can also happen when you go all spiritual? You can't really ignore the body. It doesn't work. And so what happens a lot of times is people became very, immoral with their bodies. They became very degraded with their bodies because, well, it didn't really matter. Your moral code, you could behave any way you wanted because it didn't really matter. What mattered was your spirit, your soul.
So actions of the body were totally disconnected from the spirit.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, of course, we have that today with us, you know, very much so. And it's taken on different forms, but the most modern version of it happened 500 years ago with this perfect storm, all these different forces converging. And what John Paul II said he set out to do with his theology of the body was to heal this, to cure this, to answer this, he said. This is the long-awaited answer to this mind-body split, spirit-body split. And I proofread, actually, because we printed it, the Daughters of St. Paul printed the text, the Theology of the Body text, pauline.org. And now in its current version, it's called Male and Female, He Created Them, A Theology of the Body, John Paul II. And It has a wonderful introduction where Dr. Waldstein, who found the Polish original of this text, wrote this introduction explaining why we needed it and kind of sums up the past 500 years. It's a really good read, the introduction itself. And I kind of was living this in the sense of living in my head. I was always somebody who lived in my head. I was raised that way, part of the culture. Also just, you know, I think my Irish Catholicism, you know, with a real kind of a emphasis on asceticism, you know, and hey, we were starved for 400 years, you know, we started to not care about food. We never had like food in our cabinets. We didn't eat in between meals. You know, food was not a priority for us. But anyway, so for me, I read his Theology of the Body. A lot of it went over my head because I hadn't studied philosophy or theology yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I was grasping some of his concepts, John Paul II's concepts, at the deepest levels, and it really spoke to me. One thing that I grasped, finally, was that sex is spiritual. Sex, even though it's very much of the body, it's something very, very spiritual and very sacred and holy at the same time. And that was huge for me to understand that. And then he, in his footnote number 6, he says, the Western world has a really hard time understanding the sacraments and understanding symbolism because we say it's just a symbol. So in Theology of the Body, we believe that our bodies reveal God, thus the term theology of the body. Our bodies are a theology. Our bodies reveal God because we're made in the image of God, not just our souls. Our bodies are made in the image of God. What does that mean?
let's hold that thought. We've got to take a quick break. Sorry to cut you off. More on that, folks. Hope I'm on the edge of my seat, too, so we'll be right back. Don't go away.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
And this is the Warrior Catholic Show. I am Chris Ricketts, your host on conservativenationradio.org. We are talking with Sister Helena Burns about Pope John Paul II's theology of the body and how our bodies actually are a symbol made in the image and likeness of God. Sister.
Yes. We did a little cliffhanger there where I said,
yeah.
A lot of times we hear that, we've heard that so many times, right in Genesis, that we're made in the image of God. And I think a lot of us think automatically, oh, my soul. Because it's spiritual, right? It's the spiritual part of me. The spiritual part of me is like God. But my body, well, it's this lowly thing made from dust, made from the earth. I don't really know what that has to do with anything. But, you know, my body is what it is. My soul is the lofty, high spiritual part. My body is this lowly, lesser matter part. That is not true. Our souls and our bodies are equally good, equally amazing, equally made in the image of God, because we're one person. But see, we've been able to live with that because of the soul-body split, the matter-spirit split from 500 years ago. But if we stop and say, wait a minute, a human person is body and soul together. They're inseparable. If you separate them, what happens? We die. They're not the same thing. It's a unity in duality, but not a dualism, you know, not against each other or whatever. So here's the thing. Think about this. Adam and Eve, our first parents, they only knew God as father, right? I mean, who was Adam's father? God's father, right? So they had a sense of he was their life giver, he was their father, and they were made in his image. Now, what's an image? An image is something you can see. So you could also make the argument that the body is more in the image of God than the soul, because it is the image, because an image is something you can see, and we can't see our souls, okay? Secondly, okay, now they didn't know about the Trinity, right? They only knew God the Father. So then we have Jesus shows up, the incarnation, and he looks like us. Now, he didn't take on a body to look like us just so we could communicate with him and we'd be able to see him and understand him and da-da-da-da. He's not made in our image. We're made in his image. What? Think about that one. So, and if you're a Christian, you believe that Jesus lives now with his body, his resurrected body, forever. The Trinity, God, took on a human body forever. That is mind-blowing. Would you do that if you were God? I don't know. Like, this is mind-blowing stuff. And, number three, we are temples of the Holy Spirit. Our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit, not our souls. Our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. So if we don't interface with the divine, if matter can't interface with the divine, we couldn't be temples of the Holy Spirit. So matter is pretty darn important. And I think sometimes we forget, too. We think, you know, the end of the world, we're all just going to be floating around our souls in heaven. Woo! You know, like Casper the Friendly Ghost. You know, it's all spiritual. No, it's not. There's going to be a new heavens and a new earth. That's in the Old and New Testaments several times. We have these movies, you know, Armageddon, the end of the world, is like it's going to blow up. Everything's going to blow up and go away, and then we'll be these, like, spiritual beings floating around. No. God is a materialist. God loves stuff. He made so much of it. He's bringing it all back.
That's a good bumper sticker. God loves stuff.
God is a materialist. He's going to bring it all back. And what a new heavens and a new earth, a renewed heavens, a renewed earth. And we're getting our bodies back. We're not going to escape from our bodies. We're getting our bodies back. That's what the resurrection of the body is. It's not that just that Jesus has a resurrected body and we don't. The whole point of Jesus' resurrection is so that we would resurrect. Again, the Bible is full of this language, but because we live in this split dualistic body versus spirit world, we miss that. We miss it. We miss it. Personally, I think he's going to bring back Fido and Fluffy, too. I think we're going to see our pets again. Why? Because they're not ours. They're his. He loves our hamster more than we do. He loves our gerbils more than we do because they belong to him. We're just stewards, you know. We even each other, our children, they belong to him. We have the gift of each other. It's like you have to treasure every second because you never know when somebody's going to die, you know. You just don't. So we're gifts to one another. And God willing, we'll all be reunited in heaven. But what really, this is going to be so interesting, what really drove the theology of the body home for me after I read the text and got a few things out of it, you know, I kind of put it aside and went on with my dualistic life, body versus spirit. And then Cardinal Ratzinger at the time said something that blew my mind. I didn't like it. And it took me, I think, about 3 years to square with it. He was talking about John Paul II's theology of the body, and he said, the point here is, he said, we don't say, I have a body. That's incorrect. No human being should ever say, I have a body. It's, I am a body. There is a huge difference between those two things. If you have something, it's a possession. It's not you. It's not a part of you. It's not an integral, intrinsic part of you. It's something outside of you. And it's like a possession. You can do whatever you want with it because it doesn't really matter that much. What matters is your soul. That's the real you, your spirit. You know? No, that's false, people. False. Wrong. So when you said, no, we should say, I am a body. I am my body. I am my soul. I am both of those things, but they're so united that we don't walk around saying, I am a body. I am a soul. I am my body. I am my soul. We just live it as a person. But if you have that split in your mind, the way you're thinking about it, you start to treat your body like a thing. You treat your body like a thing. You treat other people's bodies like a thing. And then you end up treating the whole person like a thing because, again, we can't split those two things. Not that they're really things. John Paul II says this. He says, we understand very well that we are embodied spirits. We understand that our soul has a body around it, if you will, even though the soul is spiritual, has no parts. But we're used to thinking of that we're embodied souls. He says, but think of it this way. Your body is also a spiritualized body because your soul is shot through your body. It's not this glowing green glob in the middle of your torso. Sometimes we think of, you know, our soul is this sort of like glowing blob. No, it's shot through your entire body. It's what keeps you alive. It's your life principle. You know, if your toes get gangrene and you're going to have them amputated, there's no life in them. Your soul is not existing in those gangrenous dead toes anymore because that part of you is dead. So when Ratzinger said that, I am my body, I didn't like that concept at all. I was kind of looking forward to getting rid of my body. You know, I suffered certain chronic illnesses. So for me, the experience of being unhealthy a lot was not a pleasant experience. And, you know, I was like, hey, I can't wait to get rid of this body. And certainly if we have something like that, we know that we'll be completely healed in eternity in heaven. Every imperfection, every disease, every sickness is going to be cured. And we will be healthy. But I just wasn't comfortable in my own skin either. You know, again, somebody who lives in her head, you know, loves intellectual pursuits and things like that. So, you know, it took me 3 years to accept that. I knew he was right because he was Ratzinger. And it was like, I had to grapple with that. I am my body. This is me. I can say that this, I am flesh. I'm not just spirit. I am flesh. Because if you say, I have a body, you have just split yourself in two. Who is this I, this self that has this other thing called a body? You see what I mean? Like you've just split yourself in two.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But if you say, oh yeah, my body's me. I am my body. Then you keep yourself as a united whole that you really are. So a lot of people like dwell on the part of theology of the body that has to do with marriage and love and sex and all of that. And certainly that is like the heart, I would say, of theology of the body. But it's important to me too, even though I'm a sister. I'm a, you know, celibate, consecrated to God, married Jesus directly, don't have a husband, don't have children, you know. But, and yet, the family is the cell of society. Everything priests and sisters do as celibates is as spiritual mothers and spiritual fathers. And my genes have no future, okay? But those who have children, they are the future. Their families, their kids, they are the future of society. And so everything we do is in order to serve the family. You know, the family really is the basic cell of society. So it's male-female love, male-female relationship. That's where the new life comes from. Families create neighborhoods and communities. Neighborhoods and communities create cities. Cities create states. States create countries. This is how the family is the basic cell of society. Unfortunately, in the U.S.
We got about a minute left with you, sister, and then I'll have to wrap things up here. So final thoughts. I know it could go on for hours, but...
Well, if you go to my blog, Hell Burns, just like it sounds, because that's my name, H-E-L-L, Burns, at blogspot.com. I have a bunch of Theology of the Body posts right up there now. I have the top three Theology of the Body movies, where you can learn Theology of the Body by watching big blockbuster films. I have, if you also search for Theology of the Body on my blog, you can get a lot of resources, too.
That sounds great. Well, you know, sister, it's been really it's been absolutely delightful talking with you and hearing. You're right, you are very intense, but it's wonderful to hear your enthusiasm and the absolute joy you convey in your vocation and in what you're doing. So I think that's really wonderful. So thank you so much for being here with us tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chris.
All right. Okay. We'll be in touch.
All right. Take care. God bless.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, folks, that was Sister Helena Burns of the Daughters of St. Paul, and that was really, really amazing hearing her story and, hearing her conversion story. And I was getting all teary-eyed when talking about how her dad was going to let her go into the order and become a nun, and, you know, just her absolute enthusiasm was it's wonderful. It gives a totally different image of the mean, stern nuns shown in the movie. You know, she was passionate and joyful, and there are so many other nuns like that. You could see the joy radiating off their face. But I got about 20 seconds, so catch at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central tomorrow is The Sound of Freedom with Hagen Resch, and I'll be back on next week with more of the Warrior Catholic Show. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good night.